that you're going to get any kind of earned distribution out of it. And the bigger problem, especially in our business, is that people think viral means free. We're talking about marketing videos. We're not talking about Charlie bit my finger, and you know, we'll talk about that kind of stuff. But in the marketing space, nothing is free. Nothing is free. So that's why we start to draw the conversation away from the word viral and more into how do we take advantage of the video landscape as it is now so that we can do something that's actually meaningful to the business or cause that we're promoting. A favorite quote of mine from The Economist, Galbraith: the enemy of conventional wisdom is not ideas, but the march of events. This is so true in our business because there's a lot of conventional wisdom around online video and interactive video. They should be short. Definitely make them short. Shoot them on a flip cam so they look authentic. It's all bullshit. It's all bullshit. And it might have been true 9 months ago, but time's marched on, and it's not true that way now. So what we're looking at is, you know, how do we address what's really going on in the industry? And we do not get caught up in the hyperbole. And you know, you don't have to be a communications doctorate to know YouTube is not going to replace television, so we're not going to have that conversation. TV didn't replace radio. Radio didn't replace the movies. We are not going to agree that video killed the radio star, because in the video era came the biggest radio star ever, right? So we're not going to get into this. The video is going to solve everyone's problems. It's going to kill TV. We know that there's a lot of people watching video. We know they watch this. I love Tillman. We know they watch that. They watch some other kind of stuff that these ladies have made. People act like it's new. Now, I'm an old dude. I'm 44. This was sex tape when I was a kid, right? But there was no internet. He's a pioneer, a trailblazer, right? This is nothing new. People use whatever medium is available to them. So how do you cut through all that noise if you're a marketer? And this is where I go back to that point that, you know, we're talking about marketing content. We're not talking about user-generated content. And that's where the viral myth comes in. That's where the idea of, I can make a video, and just because it's good, and just because I put it on YouTube and tweeted about it, a million people are going to view it the next day. Doesn't work that way. But we get sidelined by that. We get sidelined by Double Rainbow Guy, and Charlie Bit My Finger, and hamsters who are very dramatic, right? If any one of those started with a logo, I guarantee you they would not have the millions of views that they have. That is a whole different realm of video. That's not marketing. That's not what we're talking about. And, you know, when we think about, you know, what's viral, what do we call viral video in the space, two charts that I like to read regularly, the viral video chart in Ad Age, which just tracks marketing videos, but also the Unruly viral video chart, which is very interesting because it tracks everything. So if you went to just the Ad Age, you think, holy smoke, everything that's going on in the video world is marketing. Look at that. There's a Carl's Jr. There's all sorts of stuff up there. But then when you look at how does this fit in into the big picture, Coney's number one, big surprise. Big surprise about that. In American Idol video, John Lennon's Woman is the third most viewed video of the last 24 hours. I have no idea why. I tried to find out what the trigger was to that. If you know, I'd love to know. Seems kind of random. But there's no marketing videos there. So when you look at what's really hot versus what marketing is trying to crack into, it's two different things. And you know, we get asked a lot, let's create a celebrity. So I'm sure most of you know these people, right? The thing that they had in common, they all started with a YouTube video. They are people that we can work with. They're brands that we can tap into. But we're not going to create, as marketers, we're not going to create the next Sexy Phil. We're not going to create the next Justin Bieber. So we have to take a step back and say, what is it that we're really trying to do? And please don't focus on my goal is to get 10 million views, right? That's not a legitimate goal. Less than 4% of all videos on YouTube will earn 100,000 views. Over a million, it's like less than 0.5%, right? So if somebody says to you, your number one goal is to get 10 million views, they're asking you to make a video that's 99.5% more popular than any video ever made. It's a tall order. Not saying you can't do it. Not saying you can't do it. But you have to think, is that really what I want to do? Is that what I need to do? So our approach and what we're going to talk to you about today is kind of a framework of a way to look at video that actually involves science. We're not going to talk about luck. We're not going to hope that we see a double rainbow. We're not going to hope that Charlie bites my finger. We're actually going to try to create something based upon what we know our audience wants. And you know, we're marketers. We want to use it to either propel a cause or sell a product. So, Jeremy?
All right. Your five-step antiviral program. Here we go. Like Rob said, this is a framework. We're going to talk about a framework. We're not going to talk about a tutorial or a tactics. We're going to give you a broad framework to think about and trying to simplify it into five steps. And we're going to start with have a plan. Seems obvious, but a lot of people don't even know how to step into a plan and even begin to develop a plan. Creative in context. This is a big one. Context being the key word. And you'll see why. Optimize first. A lot of things that happen, what we're going to talk about, is that a lot of these things, optimization, distribution, measurement, they actually all start in the planning phase. And to be successful, you have to think of them in a forethought in the planning phase. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Distribute and promote. You'll see every video we talk about today has a distribution or promotion strategy behind it. The most successful ones, marketing videos. And that's the keyword, marketing, there as well. And we'll talk about measurement and what matters. It's very difficult for us to talk about our clients and things like that.
Me to look at that.
And this good looking guy. We created a proof of concept for today. And just curious, how many of you actually saw this video before you came here today? A few? A couple? So if you actually searched, if you actually go search YouTube, South by Southwest or SX, SW, you'd see this video in a promoted video. You'd see it if you search South by Southwest panels. You'd probably see this in promoted search. We did this, and we created this is a proof of concept, and we're going to use this as we talk about sort of why we developed this, and it's really to show you each of those steps throughout using full data, etc. So have a plan. This is the big one, and we're going to talk a little bit about what it takes. So in our world, everything starts with a trigger. And the reason why we thought about creating a video is this event in itself is a trigger. We know that this event was happening, it was predictable, and we developed content to address this trigger. So when we think about a plan, think about your trigger. Where does it start? Where is it? Is it predictable? Is it going to happen in real time? Was there a trigger happening because of today? So let's talk a little about triggers. Some of them are obvious, like Jeremy Lin. So this is something that's a trigger that's kind of ongoing. He kind of rose to fame quickly, but it's something that's being followed, and he's being regularly promoted today. Is there an opportunity to piggyback on something like that? Then there's sort of less unpredictable triggers. So something like if somebody goes on Jimmy Kimmel and there's a star, somebody's tweeting about it, you see that it's at the Oscars, for example, when people were talking about somebody's leg and a dress, a little bit more unpredictable, but it creates a trigger event. Probably the most predictable trigger event there is that big brands go after is the Super Bowl. And the Super Bowl is unique because there's a lot of earned media that's going to come on the backs of that. And earned meaning most commercials are going to go through a period of being rated, and they're going to go through voting. It's going to get a lot of legs up. Post-running it actually on the Super Bowl itself, but trigger. So let's think trigger. So how do you find a trigger event? There's some simple things you can use, and they're right at our fingertips. First, and the most obvious one, is Google. Google is both a channel and an insights tool, completely under-leveraged in most cases. And by that is everyone types in a keyword, and we have access to those keywords. And inside of that also we have access to is for every keyword, there's a different set of results. And it's important to think about it is Google's very unique because their product to us is relevance. So Google is a good first leading indicator to trust in terms of what do consumers want. So we use Google a lot, and we look at it from database of intentions. Just a guess, how many words on average do you think somebody types into Google when you search? Any guesses? Three? Four? The average number of words typed into Google is 3.5. And it's growing. And it's growing every day because as the web gets bigger, we need to use more qualifiers in our search. And so what's happening, though, is as our queries get longer, we're leaving indication or clues about what we want. And we call that intent. And we can mine those words and understand what we should do. We also can mine the landing page itself. So let's talk about this. This is something you all use probably, Google Trends, right? This, what you're looking at here right now is search volume over a 12-month period around the festival. And what you'll see here, and it's obvious, is over search volume really starts to happen for the event just after November. I think that's when, I'm not sure, when the speakers are selected. I think at that time is around November is when speakers are selected. And the search volume starts to happen. People need to book rooms, airline tickets, etc. From there, you can see what happens is we have a major trigger event coming that we can anticipate. And this is what's nice about this one is we consider this predictable. It's predictable. And every one of you in any business that you're in, you can go and actually look, go to Google Trends, type in some words that make up your business, and you can see a pattern of your landscape and identify a trigger. And that's where good planning can start. So what we did is we did a little bit of modeling. So what actually happened here around the festival? And so what we did is out here on the fringes, what you're seeing are keywords. And you can see how they actually bubble up into categories. And you'll see here, obviously, the festival itself is highly searched. But inside of that, we actually know there's tickets and information, dates and schedule. These become very targeted. So when we think about, hey, we're going to develop a video target at South By, we didn't do that. We developed a video targeting a panel. And that's specific. And we mean that because you can't try to be everything to everybody. And this is, and we'll talk a little bit about our what we sort of qualify our video to be, but it had a job and it targeted one of these groups. And you guys can all do this. This is a simple thing. You can go to Google, you can pull out words. If you're running a paid campaign, you have words available to you, and you can start doing some simple classification of the data. So all of these words rolled up into South by Southwest, et cetera. Here's a little bit different view of the data, and you'll see how it breaks out. In terms of the total query volume related to this event, this is how it breaks out. Some of them are hard to identify, and we'll take a deeper look into what are the different segments of South by, this is sort of the rolled up view of the data that you're looking at. Then it breaks into music, interactive, and film. I'd be curious, and I don't know what the data is, I wonder if there's actually more music folks here than interactive. And I don't know, I couldn't verify that, but it makes sense because this festival started as a music festival and not an interactive one. And you see kind of how it breaks out. So inside of the festival, we can start to really understand what's really going on and through the different qualifiers people are using through search. And you'll see specific queries around dates and schedules, videos and volunteers and jobs, lodging. These present opportunities. These are natural triggers that we can target. And that's what we did with this video. And you'll see it out there. If you look today, that's what we're targeting. Here's a little bit, and I'll just go back to call out quickly. This is search demand. And what we were looking at before was desktop. We can also look at mobile. So Google provides to us quickly and easily mobile data versus desktop data. So this is a big breakout that we have to look at. And what we see with South By is not a real huge differentiation in the search landscape between desktop and mobile. Other industries, other verticals, huge difference. Example, Las Vegas. Most of the desktop searches are dominated by airline and hotels. Mobile searches are all about entertainment and casinos. That makes good sense, right? Because now we're on our mobile device, we know they're in Vegas. What we need to deliver them in Vegas is something we could easily do. We had an idea, and you'll see through this data, we had an idea, and we didn't see a lot of it out there, is a party planner. There is a huge opportunity that somebody could create a video for party planning, because everybody wants to know, where are the parties and how do I get in? That's what everybody's here for. Who's here to just get drunk, you know? Everybody's here. So KPIs, Rob's going to talk a little bit about that.
So, you know, this whole conversation around planning and search, I mean, this is one of the things that differentiates, I think, how we look at this, because we haven't talked about creative yet, right? We're not there yet. We're not even talking about the idea. We're talking about using the tools at our disposal to find the topics people are interested in down to the exact vernacular of what they're using, you know, speaking in their terms, not in marketing terms. And the next step to us that we have to think about is, again, before creative, before we're thinking about what the video is going to be, what are our key performance indicators going to be? And how are we going to distribute this video? And what impact is that going to have on production and on the creative that we come out with? So I work for an agency, so I have to name things. So PPI, post-play interaction. The idea here is that it's easy to get people to play a video. And if you looked at the latest stats, there's 170 million people in the United States that watch online video each month. The average amount of time consumed is over 1,000 minutes each. That's a lot of video viewing. So it's not like it was 5 years ago where we've got to try to convince people to watch a video. What's also interesting is it's not enough just to have a video. You remember, it wasn't that long ago. It's like, oh, this is neat. These guys have a video. I'm going to watch it. That doesn't work anymore. But you can get people to watch. From a marketing point of view, the click that's most important to me is the one that comes after play. That's my engagement click. Is that click going to lead somebody to watch more of a brand's video? Is it going to lead to a landing experience? Is it going to lead to putting a person into the sales funnel? Or is it going to derail them and they're going to go watch Tillman the Skateboarding Dog or the Kardashians or whatever else comes up in related videos? So we have to try to craft a message that encourages people to do something of value for the brand or the cause that we're working with. And we'll show you some data on this later. But the thing that we don't want to do, the one thing that we do not want to do ever, again, and I'm going to make you all swear to me you will never do this again, is shoot a video and in the last 5 seconds put up a URL. Right? Nobody fucking sees it. Right? And I will show you why in a second. But if that is your marketing strategy, I guarantee you that you have no PPI coming out of that video. The other thing that we focus on too is this notion of technical and aesthetic quality. Right? So think about how your video is going to look online. You know, hopefully if you're going to shoot a nice, you know, opus, this great piece, you're going to be distributing in ways that actually keep the technology intact, that keep the viewing experience intact. You're not just going to let it, you know, throw it up on sites willy-nilly. You're going to transcode. You're going to look at the technical requirements for sites that you're posting to. You're not just going to click output of iMovie and hope that everything goes right where it lands. And you're also going to think about how you're going to shoot it, because size matters here. If we're talking about video that's for mobile consumption, to Jeremy's point, if in our search research we find out that what we actually want to target are people on mobile devices at a show, the last thing we want to do is shoot broad, beautiful landscapes, because you're going to be watching it on a screen this big. So think about what that user interaction is going to be, what that experience is going to be before we get into thinking about creative. So in the when we talk about creative, one of the things that that we look at is the context that we're providing. And we're not going to talk about creative a lot. Neither Jeremy nor I are creative directors, so we're not going to dive deep into this. But I just want to drive the point home that successful video does not have to be one type of video. It can be extremely expensive, highly produced video. It can be kind of a pro-am kind of thing, user-generated. It can be archival. There are a lot of companies out there that have great video libraries that are waiting to be tapped into. And there's this misconception because of the viral myth, because of what we think goes viral, that those videos aren't important. But you know what? If you have a library of 1,000 great videos and you can use them online and you can tag them and make them valuable to you, so what if they only get 3,000 or 4,000 or 5,000 or 6,000 views? If you have 10 videos that get 6,000 views, that's 60,000 views your brand would not have gotten otherwise. And if you're a small company, if you're a B2B marketer, drawing in niche audiences, it's extremely, extremely valuable. And one of the concepts that that we talk about is this notion of flypaper. And what we call flypaper, it's sticky video. It's video designed to catch somebody in search. So just what Jeremy was saying in terms of the keywords, in terms of understanding the vernacular that people are speaking, the kinds of content they're looking for, what if instead of going and shooting a 55-minute documentary for a client, we actually went and we shot 20 short videos that are about what the target audience is thinking? And what if we use those videos to get people into the sales funnel? It's kind of, I hate looking at this thing. It's kind of what we did with this. But this video wasn't designed to go viral. I mean, shit, if 10 million people watch this, that means that 999 point whatever were mocking me. That's not going to go viral. It's bridging content. It's content that gets the user to another destination, whether it's promotional, whether it's leading to an engagement, whether it's about, you know, getting hype around a panel at South by Southwest, or whether it's selling Blade servers or cat food. It doesn't matter. The idea is that the video is not the end-all be-all. The video is the transitional piece between the consumer need and getting into the sales funnel.
So let's talk about optimizing first. And So the question we're really trying to answer is, how do I maximize my viewership with search? And there's a couple things you can think about, and I already kind of touched on this. And it's narrowing our target. Try not to be everything to everybody. And in the world of search, it kind of looks like this. And I'm sure many of you guys have heard of the long tail. Well, the long tail is a great strategy, and it's a great tool to use in the planning phase. And what long tail refers to is words typically containing more than three words. So the head is usually one word and two and three word phrases. As you come longer, they actually call the tail. And the sum of the tail is typically much greater than the head itself. But where the competition exists is in the head. It's crowded. And what we're really trying to do is find white space. Where can we go that has demand, but also has the ability, we have the ability to win? We constantly are in the business of managing expectation and understanding where you have the right to win. And understanding search is an easy place because search is unique. Like I said, it's a channel, but it's also a bridge. We're lazy. We use search as a navigation tool. So we simply use it to go find websites. And many of you could be typing on your computers right now in Google just to navigate to a website. And so search becomes critical. And so long tail is important. And when I showed you in those, back kind of when I was looking at our intent map, what we're looking for is long tail opportunities inside of these, inside of the venues. And this is a rolled up view. And some of these aren't even at terms yet. These are queries inside of venues, looking for specific hotels. We want to target those. And that's what a video can do. And to Rob's point is, instead of maybe developing one, we develop 20 very simple videos. So we won't look at Rob anymore. This guy's better looking.
That is me.
You know. So let's take a look at a couple things tactically here, tactically speaking. The first thing that happens, and it's a critical first step when you're going to be uploading videos, you've got to create a channel. And up here, kind of see if I can get a little pointer going here. Right there, Rob Davis, Unadorned. This is a big, big deal because it's all about developing equity. Once a video goes online and people start linking to it, you can't create a channel later and move that video. YouTube does not allow you to move videos. So you got to pick channels.
Right, you actually re-upload it, yep. And you lose all of your social juice. I can't say that. Yep. And all of your views. So you have to love the channel you're uploading videos to on YouTube, and you have to love the name of it. And to Jeremy, you know, thank you for pointing out the shitty name of my channel. I'm a frustrated singer-songwriter. I had written a collection of songs I called Unadorned, and I thought, this is going to be really cool. That's what I'm going to name my YouTube channel. Well, 4 years later, I'm screwed. I'm stuck with it. That doesn't mean anything to anybody. But either I'm going to start a new channel and move my videos and lose all of the search equity and social equity that's built up, or I'm going to take a deep breath and live with it. So what we often tell people is, don't name a channel after a campaign. Name it after your brand. Name it after your core belief, something that's not going to change in 18 months. Sorry.
And that happens a lot. What you'll see here, so you know, Rob's going to be Unadorned for life. And you're going to see here is, you're looking at a title, and this is an important one because obviously that's what comes up in the search results. It sort of creates the clickability of your video. But also, it's one thing we forget is search engines, and YouTube is the second largest search engine, right behind Google.com, and actually, I think it's actually exceeded it now, is search engines just look for text. And while not sexy, some of them are starting to understand transcript, but that's why there's an opportunity to leave transcript behind at times, is they only understand text. And you'll see up here our specific title here, South by Southwest 2012. There's a lot of people still searching for South by Southwest 2011, probably for many reasons. And so we want to be very targeted. It's the name of the panel, the date and time. It's not trying to be any more than that. And that's really critical and important. So we've got a title, a description down here, which you want to bring in, and tags. And tags are really more of your keyword tags. And you want to do that homework first. So again, where you think about planning, where it comes back to the planning here is, you actually want to do some research on channels before you actually start in your planning phase. So think channel first. Where would I want to post this? Where's there competition? You can do some searches and look. It's a good place. Again, find that white space. That's where we're big believers in that. Let's go to the next slide here. So how does my content impact viewership? Go ahead, Rob.
Quick. So this is we're going to look at two slides. And quite honestly, the reason why we keep going back to the little video we made is that there's no client confidentiality or anything. We can talk about it straight up. So the little video that we shot, if you go to YouTube, if you use Brightcove or Ooyala, other good third-party players, everybody's got this data, right, where you can see a timeline of, are you retaining the audience through the clip? And there's a couple of points I want to raise around this slide. First of all, I don't care. I don't care if people watch this whole clip. In fact, 99% of the videos, maybe 100% of the videos that I work on, I don't care if people watch the whole thing. That's a red herring, that I get a complete view. What we want to do is get people information, entertainment, messaging about a brand, and we want to do it up front. Look at my retention rate on this video, right? 25% of my audience is gone 10 seconds in. That tells me that I didn't do a really good job with this video of catching them, but that's common. That's not the exception. In fact, this whole curve is a very typical curve. So I want somebody to get the information that I want them to get right away, keep them around for half the video if I can, but if I haven't given them that post-play interaction, that next step for engagement, they're gone and I've lost them. So remember what I said, don't ever put your URL in the last 5 seconds of your video. Look at what happened in the last 5 seconds of this video. I've got maybe 75% of the audience gone. They're never going to see a call to action if that's where I leave it. But what's more interesting to me is that we can look at this data relative to other videos on YouTube. So now look at my curve. And you see at the beginning of my video, my retention rate was actually below average, below the center line. The content in the middle, pretty good, above average. And then it kind of peters out as average. But wait a minute. Well, when we looked at this, it tanks at the end. We look at this, and it's telling us that that's just about average. That is something you should always remember.
There's a big driver, though, ahead of this, and it's the thumbnail. The thumbnail is an important part of your strategy. And how many of you, be honest, have clicked on a video that you thought looked interesting because of the thumbnail, but quickly aborted? And this is the thing is, you know, people didn't realize how good looking Rob was until they started watching, and it grew over time. You know, but the thumbnail, and then you can choose where you set your thumbnail, and that's a big part of the strategy too. Is what is the visual that you're leaving behind?
Absolutely, that's key to that attention rate. I'll tell you a couple of things that just as educational or matters points of information. Opens for online videos that are kind of like sitcom opens or spinning logos or things like that, they kill your viewership. Kill your viewership. Look at these curves, and I guarantee you that people are doing one of two things when you have a fancy open before you have content. They're either fast-forwarding through it or they're leaving your video, right? So it's we're not making TV shows. And think about it. If you made a series of 10 videos and they all have the same 15-second open, after like the third one, the user's like, what the hell? What am I doing? I don't need this. Think about how people use it. And really, if there's one thing you remember coming out of today, think about that stat at the end of the video. The viewership of this video tanked, but that's average. Average. So now we're going to talk about a video that's not got me in it.
Yeah. Let's take a look. So this, we chose this video. We're not associated with this video at all. But the beauty of this video is it was put online a month ago. And it didn't have, it only 2 weeks ago did it actually start to get a lot of traction, over about 1.4 million views at this point. But what's interesting about it is the, in YouTube, and it's available to everybody, just below the video there's a little metrics analytics type bar there that you can click and you actually can, it will reveal the analytics of the video. This one had some interesting ones, and so we're going to watch it and then look at what happened.
We can agree it's a pretty good piece of creative, right? Pretty good piece of creative.
It was good.
Kudos to the guys that did that.
But if we look at it, so what drove that? Obviously, the subject matter itself, but what really drove the success of that video? Did it go viral? Did it really go viral? Well, we can actually look. And what you'll see here at the top of the top graph here is typical timeline. You'll see it's from February 8th to March 9th. And you're looking at where viewership took off. And actually on that timeline, you'll see D and C. D and C. It was embedded on a website. And then the other piece there on C was it was a first view from an ad. So most likely, and we haven't tracked it back, is that video was uploaded. There was probably TV behind it that propelled it. Inside of that was married to a paid search campaign. And you'll see there, and we don't know exactly, it could be a display campaign. It could be another, but media is what pushed it. So media was the catalyst. It was the propulsion behind this campaign. And you'll see here, coming down, looking at the different sites, it was embedded on a site, had some views. As you kind of come on down, you'll see it's embedded in a couple other sites. It was share through was another paid site. And then on Facebook, we don't know if it was actually earned in that. It was probably on the brand fan page was where it was embedded, which just kind of continued it from there. And there's a lot of sharing going on. But let's take a look at a couple other things. Demographics. These are important metrics because one of the things that I'd be very curious about in terms of success, while it had lots of views, did it actually reach the right demographic? And that's critical here because from a CPG perspective, typically mom's the one who's actually buying in the household. And in this case, you'll see who actually viewed it. Surprise, you know? And it was a lot of males, older males. You got some middle-aged males, younger males. The question you would ask is, do we reach the target? Was this really a success? We don't know, but it could be a wild success in terms of the target. This is where we may want to actually go back, and this is where we're talking about optimizing and distribution. We might have to revisit our plan. So this is where, and there's this kind of this buzzword that always been flying, that's been talked about for some time, is the whole pay to earn strategy. And I think this is where it comes to life, and you can actually see it. So paid. So a lot of what drove the success of that video was it started with most likely TV supported by a heavy online campaign is what actually made it take off and build broader awareness. So YouTube promotions were most likely. There might have been some content partnerships. Most likely not in that case because of the content of that video. The earn side, you'll see that it was embedded like four or five sites. We can take a look at that, and that's what we talk about earned sharing. That's sort of the additional life it got out of it, you know, posted running through the media. And then owned, of course, where you're actually embedding it on your own properties, and that could be Facebook. Could be any one of these things, your YouTube channel, your Twitter feed. These are places you look at. But in the planning phase and in your distribution phase, you actually can kind of go back and look. And what's interesting is you can learn about maybe is there another opportunity to create a new variation of this video. We saw that wildly in with Volkswagen. They've continued to just build on a campaign around really a Star Wars theme and the dark side. So kind of looking at this a little bit differently, kind of coming back and looking at it from a pay-don't-earn perspective, what you're seeing here is you've got a number of earned opportunities here. You've got it embedded on, I believe, two soft porn sites. You know, that's interesting. You've also got two paid. You got an ad campaign driving a majority. You'll see here 317,000 views was paid. That's what brought it up. And that's another thing, too, that drives viewership is when we're actually combing through YouTube, we look at not only the thumbnail, but we also look at the number of views. And that actually is what's driving a lot of our clicks. So, again, did this video go viral? I would disagree. I would bet heavily that this was not even close to being a viral video.
But it did get great earned media after a great ad buy.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, I went to that site. There's the video. I blacked out the other stuff. What's really kind of cool about this site has driven like 40,000 views to the Liquid Plumber video, and it's still there. I think that's awesome. I know a lot of my clients would be very pissed off if I was next to Pussy Collector 4 with my... I wasn't supposed to say it. I blacked it out. I'm sorry. But kudos to these guys. And it's kind of interesting. And you think about, well, you know, what did Jeremy say? Like, most of the viewership was men. I guarantee you that most guys going to a Dutch website called X Missy are probably the older dudes we saw popping up in the YouTube demographics.
Yes.
I just looked at it, you know, educational reasons. The girl next door part's pretty good, though. So, you know, when we joke about this, but the other thing that we focus on heavily is the idea of measuring what matters. So I guarantee this is what most of us think about when we think about video metrics. We think about views and shares. We think about complete views. I already told you I don't like complete views. Did it get favorited? Did it get liked? Did it get subscribers? You know, what are the basic demographics around it? There's nothing wrong with these metrics. And I want to make sure as we talk about this that I'm clear that I'm not saying these are bad. I'm saying that these are scraping the top of what's possible for us. These are not great business driver reasons. Would you buy TV time if I told you that I have 10 million dudes who are going to watch a show at 8 o'clock? You wouldn't buy that. What if I told you I'm going to reach 10 million guys over the course of 4 weeks and we're going to have 20 million views? Right? That's what we're telling clients when we talk to them in this language. That's not important. That's not important to their business. It might be the first time out, so somebody gets a little badge and says, my video got 100 million views. But what's really important to them is moving the business forward. That's why we're making these videos. And this is the difference between, to go back to what I was saying in the beginning, what we're talking about versus Charlie Bit My Finger, versus Double Rainbow Guy. We want to quantify our success around, did we generate leads? Did we move product? For our earned views, which are so important, that social view is so key, what did we get from it? There's a great study, if you haven't seen it, from last month that BuzzFeed did with GE about the value to a brand of a shared video and how much more brand lift there is when a person actually personally shares a video with you than if you encounter it on your own. It's a great study. It's on SlideShare. Totally look at it. That's the kind of stuff that gets people talking. You know, our meaningful engagement. If we get people to like us on Facebook and they never come back, so what? Right? We want to build the conversation. We want to have ROI for the long tail. I mean, Jeremy talked about the idea of long tail. Most of the time, the strategies that we're working with are not campaign-oriented. They're not going to come for 3 months and go away. I can tell you that I've got some videos for one client right now that are 2.5 years old that are still on YouTube. We're still tracking them every month for how many people they're driving into the client sales funnel. So there's a lot of different ways to think about it. But if these aren't easy. These are not easy metrics. You can't do what we did with Liquid Plumber and go on YouTube and click a button and see how did Liquid Plumber do, with sales. You know, if you're working in the B2B space, this might mean integration with a tool like Salesforce. It might mean tracking a purchase over a long period of time. It could be a month from the time that somebody plays the video through them making a sale. But if you can track that, if you go that extra mile with your analytics, the next time you sit down with your client, you can say, I sold X amount of product from that video, not I think it went viral, I got 5 million views. That's the key to where we make this distinction around really why we don't like to talk about viral.
So this is kind of coming back to your five-step program. It requires a buddy. And the first thing here is have a plan. It sounds so obvious. But we can actually use these other steps to help formulate our plan. You actually need to predict and you need to have a hypothesis. So you can think of it, you can validate a hypothesis quickly with some of the things that we told you about. Creative in context.
The notion again, you know, think about what the job of the video is. That's going to define your creative. You're going to think about the search intent, everything from have a plan, where is it going to be viewed? What do you want people to do with it? What is the job of that video? It's great, and our creative teams love this, when we sit down with them and tell them that there's more of a job to do than just get a view. That gets them fired up. That gets them fired up. That means that we're actually going to do something besides just try to compete for that 0.5% of videos that get a ton of views.
Know your channel before you start. Obviously, most videos are going to live on YouTube. Know your channel before you start. Know your target before you start. This is what's going to actually enable success.
And there's a, you know, when we talk about distribution and promotion, there are about 95 slides that I wanted to try to cram into this that we didn't have room for. We focused a lot on YouTube in the conversation today, and I want to explain why. As we talk about distribution, YouTube's not the only game in town. But when we talk about the North American marketplace, about 40% of the video views each month in the marketplace take place on YouTube. That's a pretty big number. If there was a TV network that got 40% of the viewers every night, chances are you'd want to advertise there. The interesting thing is that there's no other site in North America that gets more than 4% of the views. So you've got YouTube at 40%, and then the whole rest of the marketplace is juggling for that other 60%. So when we think about distribution and promotion, there's a whole other aspect to this that maybe it'll be our panel next year on what you can do besides YouTube. But since YouTube is a dominant player, we firmly believe if you don't get YouTube right, your strategy's not going anywhere. And then that goes to measuring what matters and using the full impact of the platforms that you're distributing on it and getting to those business metrics.
And when all else fails, you can buy a bag of weed and wait for the break in the weather, and it just could happen today.
Who's got the weed?
That's all we had. We wanted to keep it pretty short and short. Get some questions.
Thank you. So there's a microphone in the center of the room. They've asked us to force you to make the walk of shame up to the microphone if you have a question. If you want to compliment me in my video, you can just do that from your seats. That's fine.
You guys were rock frigging solid. I mean, that was if most of the presentations would be half this good, that's gold medal.
Thank you.
I hear different things when you got into the titles, tags, keywords, great stuff. I hear different things and like to see what you know in terms of the script. With the words you're using.
Great question.
Right. Are these searchable and how much does the script matter in terms of keywords within the script?
It's becoming more important. So, a lot of the video players and sharing sites allow you to upload a transcript that can become part of the searchable entity. For our content that's really script heavy, we'll actually include the script in the description text in the video. That's one thing, you know, we didn't talk about this, but when you're looking at the description text on YouTube, I actually don't write descriptions for a user. I write them for the crawler. I write them for the search engine. So instead of doing three paragraphs of flowery text and then a link at the bottom, which is just as bad as saving the last 5 seconds of my video for a link, start with the link and then lay out your summary and your entire script so that the search engines are crawling that. And as voice recognition becomes more important, I mean, I don't know. I would predict we're probably about a year and a half away from voice search really actually meaning something in the industry.
What office are you guys in? Which Oval the office?
I am in New York in a building we call the Chocolate Factory.
Bend, Oregon.
And he's got a really cool place in Oregon.
Calls to action. How do you create them? Where do you put them? Do you put them in the description? If you can't put them at the tail end of the video, how do you add that interactivity to get people to go through your sales channel or through other marketing material, apart from the description area?
Right. So there are a couple of interesting things. Part of it is the content itself, right? And some of it is really basic. So we did some tests a couple years ago of just having a persistent URL in the bottom of your video, not clickable, just a text. I thought it was ridiculous. I thought it was the weakest thing I had ever heard of. And within a week, our client had 30% more views going from the video. Like, it's counterintuitive. You can't copy and paste it. You can't click it. It works. What's really interesting right now with YouTube is if you do a paid search on YouTube, which they call promoted video, partnered with that buy, you get an overlay ad for your own video. So you can actually have a hot link. Yeah, probably some of you have played with YouTube annotations, which can be kind of clunky depending on how you use them, but they only allow you to link to other YouTube channels. If you tag the media buy on it, then you can link from the video window out.
Yeah, and a call to action, too, is the actual thumbnail itself. It's a visual call to action. So.
Thanks very much.
I love how you guys applied the long tail to videos in general. I've only heard it applied before to niche products on Amazon. How do you convince clients in like a short way that that's more valuable than the rare double rainbow? Because you know sometimes there's just such a disconnect between a client I found that they really just expect a million views,
right.
And
right.
it's hard to break it down to them that there's a more valuable way to and realistic way to.
It's hard, and I'll tell you that we did not get traction in the B2C space first. We got traction in the B2B space, where for the most part clients weren't expecting videos to get 10 million views because we were talking about esoteric products. Where I joke with one of my clients that if any of our videos get more than 100,000 views, it's because somebody's making fun of you because there aren't 100,000 people that care about that topic. And to Jeremy's point, when you're optimizing for like three or four keywords, you're not doing the broad match. You're finding the person with that pain point, with that solution they're looking for, that need. And clients forget that people don't sit down at their computer and go, "How is brand X going to help me?" They type in whatever they need to solve. And we were able to build some case studies in the B2B space out of that, and that eventually got the B2C clients to start taking the plunge.
Yeah, and kind of as Rob said, I'd kind of look at it more from the purchase funnel perspective, is like, how are we feeding the funnel? And I think they think there's a silver bullet, that there's one video that's going to fill the funnel. And because everybody's at a different place in their either they're learning about a product or a service, and they're going to come in at different stages, if you will. And the long tail really addresses the stages.
Thank you.
Hi. I have a question in terms of just posting, if you're doing like a web series or, you know, branded content.
Yes.
If you post that on YouTube and Blip TV and Vimeo, I mean, are you splitting your audience too much? Is it the best idea just to go with YouTube and that's it? Or what?
No, actually, do you want to talk about the benefits of search to be on multiple sites?
Yeah, I mean, I think in this case, what we're really saying is there's certainly, we call it the big seven. There's YouTube that has a large part of the market share. You've got your big sites like Facebook that really only represent like 4% of your market share in terms of video, but there's the other big sevens. Rob,
it's like, you know, Metacafe, Sevenload, Vimeo, VO. These are all sites that we love to post videos on. Vimeo and VO sometimes won't let marketing content stay on, but the other ones do. And the reason they're important to us is not that my client's demographic is going to a site like Metacafe and looking up the client's product. It's that they are incredibly influential in universal search. Mm-hmm. So in Yahoo, in Bing, in Google, when we put videos on 10 different sites, in that top 20 search results page, we might have 5 hits. Now, it's the same video, but that's 5 places that the competitor's video cannot show up.
Yeah. A good way to test, too, is if you've got a target market, and think of some words, just run some search queries and see what actually comes back in the search results. Is it a video landscape? Because that's where Google using it as a first indicator of relevance of what we want to consume. You'll see some markets are dominated by just text links still. B2B markets, very much text links heavy. You've got B2C. You search some Vegas queries, it's going to be dominated by video. That's what people want to consume for that market. And use it as an indicator.
Thanks.
Hi. Hey, how you doing? I mean, I love the concept of PPI, and I come from agency background, so I love naming things. So, but as an extension of that, to what extent do you find the use of annotations connecting one video to another relevant?
Yeah, I think so. So here's what we found: the YouTube annotation feature. If you activate it just kind of in off-the-shelf YouTube, it's hard from a creative point of view to actually make it look like it's part of your content. But a lot of the content we're doing, you see a lot of vloggers doing this, Sexy Phil, SXE Phil does this, where they'll actually bake calls to action graphics in the video and then use the annotation as like an invisible overlay to link to the next video. So one of my clients has a series of 4 videos up on YouTube. In the video window itself, we have a very nice little graphic that allows people to click to part 3, part 4, part 5 without having to worry about, is it going to come up in related videos? YouTube, everybody knows, right, YouTube's changing this month. YouTube 3.5 is going through its final launch stage. So if you have any channels on YouTube that you haven't updated to 3.5, they're going to do it for you this month, which is kind of scary if those are your clients, and they're not expecting it. So I would just little piece of advice. But the YouTube 3.5 is really focused on the notion of playlists as well. And this idea that instead of sharing a video URL, we share a playlist URL, which is a container for like content in editorial order in sequence. So if you have 10 videos about something, that URL is the one click to let somebody just play through all 10 in order. Any other questions? All right. Thank you.
Fantastic.